mean, actually, it's not. I mean, it shows where the power structure is. That's already been talked about a lot on mainstream media. And I'm going to be talking about it more on my show. I do a show on, as you probably know, from 6 to 8 tonight and on Sunday.
Yeah. That's called Bathrob Spears Broadsides, right?
Well, it's not Bathrob Spears Broadsides. It's Bathrob Spears Broadsides.
Well, we all just slur the words, you know.
The slurring of the name of my show.
Excuse me. I know.
All right, then.
There's lots of things that I have to do in the morning that's kind of hard to do.
No, I understand. No, it's a mistake
like
a lot of people make. It's not simply you. A lot of people think it's Bathrob Spears Broadsides, but I'm not a spear guy. I've never used a spear. I probably never will. It's more about Robespierre and a bathrobe, so it's Bathrobespierre. But let's get back to the police department. They're my favorite topic, or at least topic of the moment.
Quite timely topic.
Yeah, I think so. In August, I think it was around the time of the Ferguson murder, as I perceive it, when Brown got shot down by Wilson.
Yeah.
I got interested again. I mean, I've been interested in this for a long time, in what the Santa Cruz Police Department's policies are regarding, let's say, use of batons, guns, tasers, pepper spray, chokeholds, all that stuff. What their guidelines are. More important, how many times and against whom and in what circumstances they've used these things in the last 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent them a Public Records Act request, and I got a lot of diddly-doo back and forth with Jackie Dreschler, who's the public records keeper, probably just under orders from Vogel or Steve Clark or whoever's, you know, press managing the whole thing, particularly in light of the Ferguson, oh dear, you know, they're exposing our underwear that we're, you know, this is all supposed to be kept out of public view, that, you know, police officers are unaccountable. It's fundamentally the bottom line. Well, the attempt to bring them to it, but they're supposed to be accountable at least in terms of public documents. And so I was able to, and I got this actually some time ago, a couple years ago, the police department's policy manual, Santa Cruz Police Department's policy manual. And it's posted on free radio, on Santa Cruz Indie Media. If you want to go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz or Santa Cruz Indie Media, just browse for it, Santa Cruz Independent Media. And then look up SCPD Policy Manual, or just look up Norse, my last name, because I posted under that. You'll find their very thick policy manual. And what's significant about the policy manual is it's really, I've been told, and I don't know actually how true this is, but I kind of have been repeating this as though it were true. If you see a police officer engaged in criminal behavior, it's less likely you'll get anything done to him by his superiors than if you find he's violated a police department policy. So what you really want to find is the policy that she or he is violating, rather than, you know, oh, he shot someone down in cold blood. Well, we can explain that, you know, and then they do, and away you go. You know, I'll give him administrative leave for a couple of weeks, and, you know, if necessary, you know, even if an independent investigator, as rarely happens, comes in, as they did in the case in 1999, 2000, of an officer who was twisting a woman and her child as she was holding her baby in a protest in front of the McPherson Center way back in 1999. They actually got an independent investigator who found that the police officer used excessive force, which was the only time that our police review board ever found excessive force. And that they only found it because the independent investigator found it. And that was the only time they ever got an independent investigator in there, because there was massive protest and you had a new city council that was trying to prove it was a bunch of liberals until they crapped out. So it's rare to have, you know, a police officer actually held accountable. He wasn't really held accountable. He was simply, he left the force and he joined a nearby force. And I believe it was Pleasanton or Concord or some near city, Menlo Park. I don't know, because he stopped me later on the road to chat with me. So, in other words, he certainly wasn't prosecuted for threatening a woman's life, and instead, Steve Argue went to jail for 9 months for punching the cop in order to free the woman from this cop's possibly fatal grip and the danger of her dropping her child and so forth. So when are the circumstances that police officers in our on our force, not in Ferguson, not in New York City, not in San Francisco, but here, are using dangerous, lethal holds and are held unaccountable, whether they are and implements and equipment like pepper spray and so forth? Well, that's what I wanted to know. I mean, and maybe they're all justified. Maybe every single occasion it's used was needed to subdue a dangerous person. Well, I'm going to post the information I got online, and I encourage people to go to Santa Cruz Indy Media to look at it. But the short answer is they stonewalled, although they did give me the number of times that different things were done. They told me how many times a person was tasered in the last 2 years, how many times a person was, a gun was, I don't think they even, I'm not sure if they said when a gun was drawn, although that can be important. But they're supposed to keep a record of all that stuff. But one of the issues that's being raised nationally is police departments are not even required to report to the federal authorities or to any other authority when they kill someone. So we don't even know how many times the police nationally have killed people. I mean, locally you're likely to because it generally makes the papers, even if it's only a small section in the back that said, he was a drug dealer, he was running away, he drew a weapon, all these things, which are customarily hauled out to justify any police shooting or use of excessive force. Although, you know, in some cases it may be true, but it's just the standard rap that they use across the country. So I wanted to find this out. So I'm still trying to find out more. We have a public safety committee of the Santa Cruz City Council, which is supposed to be overseeing this stuff, but it actually is simply empowering the police with more opportunities to do this kind of stuff. David Chirazes, the recently reelected city council member, heads this group. I think it's Pamela Comstock, Chirazes, and I think it's Cynthia Matthews, but I'm not sure. The composition of the Public Safety Committee changes. And instead of going after, or at least monitoring, what our police department is doing on a regular basis, and this was the case even when Don Lane was on the committee, I believe, they are pushing forward legislation that criminalizes poor and homeless people. And that, you know, for example, one's coming up next Tuesday, the stay-away order stuff. So, if I've talked about that, and I'll be talking about that on my show, essentially give the police more opportunity to claim there's crime happening so then they can launch into these other more extensive methods of force if the individual says, hey, get your fucking hands off me, you know, I'm not doing anything. Then you are, really in trouble because you're not showing adequate respect for this illegitimately exercised authority. The issue that we have that is really linked to the national concerns, and it's racial too. We've investigated. Huff has gone to the Santa Cruz Police Department to check out the record of Bradley Barnett, who is a sort of notorious police officer downtown, who has been particularly harassing of a couple of street vendors like Kate Wenzel, the scarf lady. Not so much recently. She reports things have gotten better, and we wanted to look at his record and see if he's got some penchant for some kind of racial bias in what he does. And when we looked over all his citations, we found that he cited black people, not so much Hispanic people, but black people, at a rate of 7 times their frequency in the county population. Now, to be honest and to be fair, it's possible that, they're more criminal than everybody else, because we know all black people are criminals, right? That's otherwise, why would there be so many in jail? That's what obviously, that's a bunch of bullshit, but that's one possible way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is, well, maybe there's a bunch of people downtown in that area who happen to be African American, and therefore Officer Barnett is, citing them more frequently. I don't know, but we need to have the racial stats for the entire police department on what they're doing. And I recently asked for those stats on Officer Azua, who has been videotaped ticketing an African-American guy down near Taco Bell for smoking when he wasn't smoking, and at least according to the accounts of people who were there, and then letting an employee, a white female employee, walk by with a cigarette in her mouth. So, I mean, you have all kinds of, not just palpable disparities in how the police are treating different racial types of people in Santa Cruz, at least in some circumstances, but you have it being pointedly ignored when it's brought to the attention of Chief Vogel. It was in a letter from John Colby about 2 or 3 months ago. So we have a problem in Santa Cruz, and the point is here, how do we address it? When's the best time to do it? How can we address it? There was, of course, a big march to the police station 2 weeks ago or so when the bogus verdict came out that, you know, exonerated the murderer, Darren Wilson, who killed Michael Brown, you know, in Ferguson. But the first thing we need to do is clarify what our demands are, and then we also have to start escalating or continuing the kind of protests that the brave people of Ferguson have been doing for months at a much greater risk to their liberty and life than any of us face here in Lily White, Santa Cruz. So that's really my interest, is to see some policies changed. And the first thing we need to show is that the policies are being hidden. And the second thing we need to show is what the policies are. And that's the other thing I wanted to mention. I mean, the original reason I called in. Tell me if I'm going on too long.
Well, what would you like us to let you know about if we find out more incidences of this? Or do you think that these public records requests are going anywhere? Oh,
well,
they do go
somewhere. They just don't go to the distance they need to go. But even their partial journey is helpful because you can see that the police department is not revealing information that really they're supposed to be revealing, or that why should they be concealing it? You know, I mean, that's the issue. But equally important and interesting to me when I looked it up today, because I did get their policy 300, which, you know, you can find. It's in the police policy manual. I mentioned before, find an officer guilty of murder, he goes free. If you kill somebody, there's no indictment. The prosecutor works too closely with the police and isn't interested. Doesn't want to jeopardize his connections, you know. Just like some political activists, you know, don't want to jeopardize their connections with older members of the ACLU or members of established liberal organizations who've done nothing for years about these issues, but like to pretend and fundraise on the basis that they have. So it's a persistent problem. It's a problem of corruption and co-option that happens. But if you, of course, violate a police department policy and you can show that, that may annoy the higher ups in the police department, because police officers are supposed to, if they violate policies, we certainly don't want that to come out in a visible way, because that way we seem to be violating our own internal policies, and that violates the military discipline of the police department, right?
Of course.
So what is the policy regarding the use of lethal force? Well, 25 years ago, attorney Ray Glock Grunig, and he was an attorney at that time, spoke, I believe it was to the Board of Supervisors or to the Santa Cruz City Council, denouncing the use of pain compliance holds, the chokehold that killed Eric Garner in New York City, by the Santa Cruz Police Department against peaceful UCSC activists who were supporting the rights of homeless people to sleep by doing a sleep-in at the town clock in the early months of 1989. And the officer who did this was a guy called St. Ange, who is no longer with us. I think he had a drunk driving accident, and, you know, he retired from the force some years after. He was a portly, angry officer who, you know, was one of many in the police department. But it's not, the point is not to criminalize him particularly, though certainly to hold him accountable for what he did. But these issues have been raised for decades in Santa Cruz, and they probably will need to be raised for decades more until they're addressed. But the policy is this. Here's the policy on, at least on chokeholds. I'm reading it, 300.2.4 from the policy manual. You'll be able to find this online. I'm posting a story about it, and I'm posting this section of the use of force, the policy manual. It says, pain compliance techniques may be very effective in controlling a passive or actively resisting individual. I want you to understand now, New York City has banned this tactic. Santa Cruz has not. Okay? We have to clarify that that's the case. This is what killed Eric Garner on the sidewalk this last summer. Officers may only apply these pain compliance techniques for which the officer has received departmentally approved training and only when the officer reasonably believes that the use of such a technique appears necessary to further a legitimate law enforcement purpose. I'll read that again.
Okay.
And I'll summarize it. Well, first of all, again, the actual wording is, officers may only apply these pain compliance techniques for which the officer has received departmentally approved training, you know, been to class for 7 hours or whatever the hours they require, and only when the officer reasonably believes that the use of such a technique appears necessary to further a legitimate law enforcement purpose. Notice the specific words. The word reasonably is in there, which is supposed to protect you, so he can't just believe it and it's a whim he has, but it has to be a reasonable belief. But it has to be a belief that it appears necessary, not it is necessary, but it appears necessary to further a legitimate law enforcement purpose. Let's say arresting a guy who's selling loose cigarettes on the streets of the city, or possibly sitting on the ground but says, I have a right to sit here and I'm not getting up. You can use a chokehold under those circumstances because that's a legitimate law enforcement purpose. He's violating the law. She's not moving her butt when she's told to do so. That's a legitimate law enforcement purpose, or at least he can reasonably believe it. So it's a complete blank check for the use of pain compliance holds, the kind of murderous holds that are banned in New York City and that killed Eric Garner. We have that pain compliance technique 300.2.4. It also says, officers utilizing any pain compliance technique should consider the totality of the circumstance, including but not limited to. Notice, including but not limited to, add anything else you want to, potential for injury to the officer or others if the technique is not used. Notice, the risk of potential risk of serious injury to the individual being controlled, and of course that's the reason these techniques are banned in New York City. The degree to which pain compliance technique may be controlled in application according to the level of resistance, the nature of the offense involved, the level of resistance of the individual involved, the need for prompt resolution of the situation, if time permits, e.g. passive demonstrators, other reasonable alternatives. The application of any pain compliance technique will be discontinued once the officer determines that compliance has been achieved. And then it gives you a description on how to use carotid restraint. And I'm going to have to clarify that I'm reading, it looks like, the wrong section. Pain compliance is when you start twisting someone's hand behind their back. What actually happened with Eric Garner, and I'd like to apologize for misleading you, but it's still here, is carotid restraint is what was used on Eric Garner. That's the chokehold. Pain compliance is a little different. I just read about pain compliance. The carotid restraint hold by a trained officer may be effective. It should only be applied under the following conditions. One, you got to receive departmentally approved training. Two, it can only be used when you reasonably believe that such a hold appears necessary to prevent serious injury or death to an officer or other persons. So here it is not just any useful law enforcement purpose. You can torture someone for a useful law enforcement purpose with a pain compliance hold, but you can only start strangling them if there is it appears necessary and you have a reasonable belief that it's necessary to prevent serious injury or death to an officer or other person. And then you're also supposed to bring over a medical person if it happens. You're supposed to tell the person who's you're giving the guy to or the gal to that they've gotten the pain compliance hold, and notify your supervisor, and then document it in related reports. So I apologize for suggesting that the Eric Garner situation is equivalent on the pain compliance hold. It states that you can use it to prevent serious injury or death to an officer or other persons. But I'm not. I think that probably, and I have not looked at the New York City stuff. That is not, I would suspect, at least what the media tells us, New York City has simply banned the hold, period. And it was clearly obvious that in New York City that pain compliance hold was not required. I'm sorry, the carotid artery, the choke hold, was not required to take down, or at least to protect the officer or others nearby from serious injury. That, at least based on the video that has been widely shown on the media. I hope I haven't been too confusing in any of this.
Have you read the Washington Post? Have you read that about the county cop that got fired immediately after he brutally choked a student in Knoxville, Tennessee?
No. Did that happen after this? When did that happen?
Why does it say April 28th? Oh, that's ridiculous. Okay, well, I just got this. Anyway, I just read this. It was posted on Facebook, but it looks like it says April 28th.
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Okay, so it says that a deputy Brandon Gilliam wrote that Dotson began to physically resist officers' instructions to place his hands behind his back and at one point grabbed on to an officer's leg.
Ooh.
And so there's a whole video on this and shows it going. And he was charged with public intoxication. This was the arrestee. And resisting arrest. He was released from jail on $500 bond. And then it said that the sheriff, Jimmy J.J. Jones, in my 34 years of law enforcement experience, excessive force has never been tolerated. After an investigation by the Office of Professional Standards, I believe excessive force was used in this incident. The investigation will now be turned over to the Knox County Attorney General's Office to determine any further action.
Yeah, well, we don't know actually what happened after that, I guess. And again, we're talking Tennessee, and I'm really trying to talk Santa Cruz.
It's just kind of interesting. Maybe all this stuff's coming up to the forefront because of the bullshit.
Well, although that sounds like an earlier story. I mean, what we need is, you know, this whole section, which I'm going to be posting, tells supposedly the circumstances under which our police force can shoot a person, beat a person with a baton, spray a person, and so forth. But the issue is, how many times have they done it, under what circumstances have they done it, and was it legitimately done? And that we have no information on until such time as we essentially force the police department to reveal, you know, what it did. And that, of course, the police department officers union don't want to do, because they want their people to be inviolate and unaccountable. And they, you know, they heroicize them as these great, you know, defenders of the country and the city and the county, which in fact, unfortunately, in many cases, they are not. You know, they're paid bureaucrats and civil servants who happen to carry guns around on their hips and have all kinds of weaponry that they use to enforce a kind of order in this community, which severely disadvantages people of a certain skin color, of a certain income level, and of a certain lifestyle as well. You always hear this, we got the good police officers and the bad police. No. We have police officers, period, who are required by the system of policing and by their job requirements to essentially be bad police officers. And if they choose not to do it, it's contradictory, because you're trying to make enough money to, you know, rent a room, maybe support a family, and frequently you don't live in town. We don't even know how many police officers actually live in Santa Cruz, and the issue
don't
of
even know how many
need to be in their own community is an equally important one. I think that's been discussed nationally too, at least in the Ferguson situation. So I just wanted to kind of give you a heads up, and I've gone on and on, and we'll probably go on and on again tonight about this. When I do a show from 6 to 8, invite people to call in and listen in about the need we have to make particular demands on our police department, on our community, to essentially really need, of course, to find a substitute for the kind of policing system we've had here and that's been, you know, in force across the country. It's corrupt, it's violent, it's unequal and unfair. And it's also ineffective in terms of actually helping people who lost something, who had something taken from them, in creating greater community safety. It's been creating posses recently against homeless people. You know, downtown neighborhood groups that are, you know, seeing a threat behind every person in a sleeping bag. Needle mania and hysteria against people who are addicted outside, or, you know, look like they might be a needle user. We have a really counterproductive and dangerous situation that is created by the institutions we live under. And it's not by bad people, either bad people in the police department or bad people who are outside the police department. It is created by the fact that we have a situation where people are afraid, and they can't join together to give each other the solidarity and support they need, not against the criminals, but essentially to create the living circumstances in all our lives that might make it a more reasonable situation where people could have do meaningful things with their time for the community, share things they need to share, and operate in ways that do not involve force and fear and obligation, but rather that involve real feeling and the real needs we have, and responding to those needs based upon voluntary, you know, mutual aid, as Mr. Kropotkin once put it.
Well, I enjoyed hearing all of that you are speaking about.
Thanks.
I could check and see if there anybody is going to respond to this, but I let them know the ways to do it.
I'll get off the line so you can call some other callers, and again, I'll be on tonight with a guest, by the way, from the jungle, specifically the homeless encampment in San Jose that was supposed to be destroyed this morning at 6 o'clock or 6:45, and to see what happened. We'll get an update from Peter Aguirre, who's going to call in, hopefully, to the show.
Well, I'll expect to hear that then.
Alrighty.
Well, ta-ta, and good time to you doing your police duties here.
Ooh, well, you...
Don't forget to police yourself. Be aware of the police, yeah.
Kill the cop within, as they say.
Yeah. Good song. Thanks for calling, Robert.
Thanks for answering.
Ciao.